So I think the biggest thing is, this is a cliche, but knowing your audience, right? Like you need to pitch it, the what you're saying needs to be pitched at the right level. And that doesn't mean that it can't be pitched at numerous levels all at the same time, right? Like when someone watches Shrek, right? Like a 5-year-old kid can appreciate the humor, but also, you know, like their parent can also like have a decent time.
And it's with that frame of mind that Peter Lebedev is working on a PhD to work out just exactly how science education videos can not just teach content knowledge, but encourage reflection as well. This is going to be an interesting chat.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. Now, I reckon that you've probably been on YouTube once or twice, right? Let's be honest, some of you might have actually been on YouTube like in the last 5 minutes prior to turning on this podcast. Now, here's the thing. YouTube is being used by students all over the globe as a research tool to learn about science and all sorts of other stuff. The thing is that stuff that's being presented useful and relevant to that learner? How's it handling different audiences of different ages? That's exactly what Peter Lebedev is doing at the School of Physics at the University of Sydney. His PhD research is around how to create physics education videos that don't just teach the content knowledge, and hopefully that content knowledge is correct, but also does it encourage deeper reflection by the learner. So Peter's got a bit to do with his project. He's got lots of YouTube videos to review, and hopefully it'll be very interesting to find out what comes out of his research. So today is all about what's out there in the media's landscape and what that means for the learner.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
It's been quite hectic. So I'm 1 year into my PhD, so starting my second year now, and it's just insane. It's just data collection after data collection. It's human ethics after human ethics. But, you know, and like teaching and all that stuff. So it's very busy, but it's fascinating stuff. I love it.
It is. Now, you do actually have a fascinating role, and I love your topic, but there'll be people who don't know what you get up to. So Peter, tell us, what do you do?
Well, currently, I am a physics education PhD student. So I'm trying to figure out, I'm part of a group at Sydney University that's trying to figure out how to teach physics better as a very general, broad thing. My specific interest is in teaching physics through multimedia. So primarily focusing on, currently I'm primarily focusing on YouTube. And I'm not just focusing on the content knowledge or the conceptual understanding of physics. I'm also really interested in how people think about physics and how they analyze sources and how they, you know, reflect and how they change their minds. So that's currently what I'm focusing on.
What led you down that path? Because that's, you know, I can see why there's serious value in doing a PhD in this. I can totally see that. But what made you think, you know what, I've got to go check this out. I've got to find out these answers.
Well, so we can go a little bit further back and just go what got me into physics in the first place.
Sure, that's why really not?
Where it starts, right? Like, I'm interested in this because I think physics is incredibly valuable. And I was very lucky that both of my parents were physicists, and they still are physicists.
Well, what do they do, by the way?
So my dad did his PhD in plasma, and my mom is a seismologist, and both of them are working over in Perth. One's at Curtin, one's at CSIRO, doing geophysical modeling stuff. It's all about rock physics. It's like material science with like fluid dynamics and, yeah, lots of cool, hard differential equations.
So you were basically doomed from the beginning, right?
Oh, totally, totally.
Fair enough. Okay, so you're obviously clearly into physics. You've got a background in physics with your family. So you got into physics education, I'm guessing, from there.
Yeah, so I did an undergrad, and I did my honors in geophysics because, you know, why not? I was really into I'm obviously really into the physics, but also there's the planetary side, right? I absolutely love planetary science. I think our solar system is absolutely fascinating, and we know very little about it. So when I finished my honors, it was either do a PhD studying meteorites, which is really cool, or go over to Sydney and start this PhD with my my supervisor, Professor Manjula Sharma. And the story with that is kind of goes back to this guy called Derek Muller, who
yes.
you might recognize as
Veritasium.
Veritasium, yes, exactly. So he did his PhD with Manju. He started in 2004, right? That was before YouTube existed. And his PhD was on how do you use short linear multimedia? So how do you use short videos to teach physics effectively? Because he was obviously into, you know, documentary making and Carl Sagan and all these people and wanted to do that for a living. So that was his PhD. He wanted to figure out how to actually use these tools to not just get clicks, right? To actually teach people something. And yeah, I am a big fan of Derek, and I have been lucky enough to work with him a little bit recently.
Yeah, wind it forward. He sort of achieved that more than just a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. He's doing amazingly well for himself and, you know, having a huge positive impact on the world. And I'm not necessarily saying that I'm trying to emulate that, because, you know, I think people are, you know, different. Like I'm going to be me. Like I can't be Derek 2.0. I'm just going to be Peter 1.0.
Fair enough.
But like the impact that he's had on so many people, I think is, you know, wonderful, right? And if I could, you know, in the future do something similar, I think that'll be a life very much well lived. So yeah, I guess the physics education side of things, I'm really just really into science, and I'm really into talking about science, and that's kind of like the logical extension of that, right?
Love it. And look, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I've sort of bitten that apple and well swallowed it. I'm very much running a physics, you know, a space that does it too in our own little way. And I totally agree. And I love the idea of just thinking from a point of view of just serious volume. I mean, something like YouTube and all that type of thing is, yeah, it's a huge thing, especially nowadays. But the fact that you can have genuine impact to someone in a place that you'll never ever go to, and you'll never ever get to meet that person, yet you can actually spark an interest, is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that actually dovetails nicely with what you're actually studying now.
Yeah, I think that's a huge appeal as well. But what I also want to say, that the stuff that you're doing, I mean, like the stuff is obviously reaching lots and lots of people, but you're also talking to students directly, and I also think that's incredibly worthwhile. It's really cool. I'm kind of taking this opportunity to say thanks for your work. I think it's really cool.
Oh gosh. It's the people just driving the car or walking the dog going, oh gosh, we can have a bit of a minute or two just to pat each other's backs. But no, thank you very much. No, Peter, no, it is a lot of fun. And but I mean, I'm always curious about how people are impacting their audiences and their world, regardless of whether they're in a classroom with 30 kids every single day, because that's a deep impact. That's working with people very directly for a very long time and watching their growth. Mm. Or sort of, in our case, often being only parachuted in some ways. And in your case, it's actually via distance even further. I mean, how do you, I guess we haven't gone down this line and it, you know, to any real degree. And I'd imagine that it's a two-edged sword. You can either do it really well or really poorly. I mean, I guess just out of interest, I mean, you don't want to name names in some ways, but I mean, what have you seen where people have tried but genuinely not really helped? I guess it's the best way to put it.
Yeah, sure. I think there are a lot of people that do a great job, but there's also some people that, I think there's people that just preach to the choir, so to say. Hmm. And I mean, there's certain public figures in science that seem to attract just like a particular crowd. Right, like I think the atheist community is quite popular for that. You know, I think the only people that read books written by, you know, famous public atheists are people who are like already, you know, if that makes sense.
No, actually, I actually get what you mean. We were lucky enough to be involved in helping produce the Innovation Games last year, and there's a bit of this stuff coming up again for Sydney Olympic Park. And one of the prime directives, and I love what Mike Bartlett was saying with this, was we need to reach the people who don't want to be reached.
Yeah, totally.
And I went, that's just it. That is exactly the point. And no, I agree, because I often worry about the choir. I mean, eventually you might as well just be off the same songbook, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's a very, very hard thing to do, right? Like, reaching people that don't want to be reached is incredibly difficult. So I totally understand why people, like, it's very comfortable to be in your own echo chamber.
Yeah, we call it a work science by stealth.
Yeah, totally, totally.
But no, it totally. So then obviously on the flip side, you'll have people who are just completely nailing it. And so, I mean, I guess, what have you seen out there that absolutely works?
In terms of specific people or
more about like in regards to your own studies, like, I mean, you're sort of evaluating what works, what doesn't, and all the rest. I mean, in terms of things that, you know what, this is just exactly perfect.
So I think the biggest thing is, this is a cliche, but knowing your audience, right? Like, you need to pitch it. The what you're saying needs to be pitched at the right level. And that doesn't mean that it can't be pitched at numerous levels all at the same time, right? Like, when someone watches Shrek, right? Like, a 5-year-old kid can appreciate the humor, but also, you know, like, their parent can also, like, have a decent time. Right. And I think you can also do that with science videos or science shows. Right. I saw Brain Candy, which is Adam Savage and Michael Stevens, so Mythbusters and Vsauce. And they were absolutely brilliant because it was pitched at maybe about 3 different levels. Right. Like, it, like, the comedy and the explanations worked on the level of a 5-year-old. The comedy and explanations worked for the level of a high schooler. And then there was, you know, more difficult stuff for, you know, people who are older, and there were more like political jokes and all those kind of things. So I felt like I have 2 degrees in this, right? And still I felt like my understanding of, like, Bernoulli's principle was a little bit more solidified because it was such a beautiful, wonderful demonstration, but also I felt entertained. But I also knew that a 5-year-old would have been entertained as well, you know, and they would have learned something. So I found that really inspiring.
It's really a hard balancing act, isn't it? Because I agree. It's almost like double entendres without anything bad within it. It's just so I've got the older audience, I've got the younger audience, I've got the people who are just beginning to grasp the topic, then I've got the experts in the audience as well, especially in a public event. It's a tightrope and a half to try and walk.
Yeah, totally. It's a razor's edge.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, I suppose you'd experience this a bit with some of the work that you do with Dr. Carl. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so that's actually an interesting story. I got very lucky last year where I just moved to Sydney. I'm originally from Perth, and the first week, I get to the physics building and I get shown to where my office is, and yeah, cool. Okay. Day 1 of PhD. Fantastic. Super exciting. And then I look down the hallway and there's Dr. Carl, and I'm like, wait, what? Right. Like, I didn't even know that Carl was at UCID when I came, when I started my PhD, but yeah, so he's kind of an honorary associate here, and he has this office, and that office is 2 doors down from my office, which is very cool.
So if people are overseas, if you don't happen to be in Australia, not quite sure who Dr. Carl is, think like Bill Nye the Science Guy for Australia, if that kind of helps.
Totally. It's that kind of level. And yeah, so I knocked on his door and I came and said hi, and I was like, hey, I'm a new PhD student, I'm really interested in science communication, all those kind of things. And we had a lovely chat, and then he was like, hey, I need a researcher and a fact checker on this new show that I'm doing with Discovery. Do you want to help? And I was like, yes.
Yeah, so like, sure, yeah, sir.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. Couldn't say yes faster.
What topics did you have to research, just out of interest?
Oh yeah. So it was the Dr. Carl's Outrageous Acts of Science, which was on Foxtel last year.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll be able to find copies of it floating around somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was basically everything, right? It was this very wide range of topics. It was this very kind of discovery show that focuses on explosions and, you know, tarantula stings and all these kind of, like, you know, the kind of the science, the wacky zany science that gets a lot of clicks.
I get what you mean, yes.
So that was actually really interesting to work on, because you're trying to include as much valid scientific content into something that is primarily entertainment, right? Like the goal of that show isn't education. The goal of that show is to, you know, have people watch just the Discovery Channel.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of these are really small sound bites. I mean, it's something that myself and Holly at work too have had to deal with in terms of often we'll be asked to do a cross in a, like a weather cross for Channel 7, mm-hmm. Channel 9, Channel 10, some of that. And you've only got about 20 seconds. And you yeah. want to do something that's actually decent without completely invalidating the data, like what, how actually science works.
Yeah, yeah.
And all in an entertainment context. I mean, I suppose the format in a Discovery Channel program like that, you got a bit longer, but geez, you haven't got that much long when you actually look at the seconds ticking by.
No, no, you don't. And there were a lot of comedians on the show. Like the focus was very much like, this is meant to be funny. So you're constantly trying to find the angle that's funny and interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's all these like limitations from just the nature of TV.
Actually, right. Speaking of comedians, you know, it's funny how these chats always just take different paths. You never know where you're going to go. But the I remember actually listening to some people, professional public speakers, saying, who should you get trained to be a really good public speaker? And they suggested, you know, to be honest, I mean, straight up, get a comedian to train you.
Mm.
And you think about, like, having to stand on stage, you've got no props. It's just you and a microphone. Mm. To be able to get a topic across where they're actually going to laugh and they don't know you, it's a tough deal. And I suppose now you're working with the comedians on a show like that, that would have been a rigorous process.
Yeah, I actually think that's brilliant advice. I think if anyone's taking like the one thing away from this podcast, I think that that's the gold nugget right there. Yeah, I think being a comedian is incredibly hard, right? And I think that's something that more science communicators can learn from. I think we sometimes get too focused on the data, right? And the data is important. Truth is important. Don't get me wrong. I'm definitely not saying that's not important. I'm just saying that people respond to humor and people respond to stories. And if you are, as a science communicator, are not telling stories, right? If you don't have something to draw people in, well, they're going to tune out.
Oh, absolutely.
And
I mean, like,
that comes back to the previous thing that you're saying, like, how do you get people engaged who don't want to be engaged? It's by telling stories, right? It's by telling interesting stories that people can relate to.
I absolutely agree. I mean, like, I was doing a connection to a school in Tennessee Saturday morning. It was like from 1 a.m. to 4:30 a.m. because I'm a masochist. But anyway, so we're doing these connections. It's a lot of fun. I just love doing them. Mm-hmm. And I always love starting with the time discussion. And usually they've been prepped. They know it's, early in the morning or late at night, whichever way you want to put it. But then I love just simply, and this has got nothing to do with the science whatsoever. It's mm-hmm. just simply just notation is, can you, kids, can you just tell me what date it is? In this case, it for them was the 9/3/18. And so they'd tell me the date. And so I'd write 3/9/18, knowing full well that's exactly how the notation is over there, month, day, year. And then I'd go, right, okay, so it's 1 a.m. for me, so it's the next day. So what day would it be for me, kids? And they all go, it'd be the 10th. And so what I write then is 10/3/18. And they all freak out. And the kid puts his hands up and goes, are you telling me it's in October? and it's, I totally get it. And the poor kid was, he was not used to seeing it. I go, no, I'd circle the month in two different ways, noting it down. And go, look, there are regional differences. You might be communicating the same information back and forth, but you're actually still speaking a different language if you actually look deeper. And it's a really nice way to start off a science program of, look, we've done the time zone thing, and it's nice to get to know each other. But I get the kids to say, stop and think about what we're presenting, because what I'm presenting might be sort of similar to what you've been talking about, but maybe we need to look deeper in the first place.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
It's a lot of fun too. It freaks people out. Yes. I must say, at 1 a.m, though, I kind of sometimes just mess it up completely. But anyway, so I digress.
The biggest takeaway from Derek's thesis, right, was that to get people, like the biggest learning gains happened from the videos that confused people a little bit.
Right.
Right. It's not the ones where the information was clear and concise and easy to understand. right? It's good that the explanation is clear and concise and easy to understand, but maybe the first little bit you need to have, you know, a little bit of confusion. And if you can address a misconception, I think that's really worthwhile. There's a video that would be really great to put in the show notes of him walking around with a book and a hard drive and going, hey, so put your hand on the book and put your hand on the hard drive. Tell me which one's colder.
And I love that.
Everyone says that it's the hard drive, right?
Yep.
And then just confusing people going, well, no, look, they're the same temperature, right? They're at room temperature right now, right? Just one is more conductive, right? And then that's your in, right? That's your in to talk about, you know, thermodynamics and thermal physics and, you know, conductivity and all these other things.
Oh, speaking of preaching to the choir that we're talking about earlier, that's exactly what we do for a properties materials program. Like, it's, I actually talked about this way back in episode 2 when I was talking with Isabel Kingsley from the Powerhouse Museum. I love this demo. In fact, the people at work are sick of me talking about this, but I love the demo where, take it, you got the book and the hard drive. We just use two baking trays. One is rubber, one is steel. And you get the kids to feel both ones, and then you put ice on them. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the ice actually melts like ridiculously fast on the cold feeling steel baking tray.
Yeah.
Because it conducts heat. It's really good at it.
That's so good.
I love that thing. And that's kind of cool, because I suppose a hard drive and a book, you just walk around campus and just, you know, get anyone off the street. That's cool.
For sure. But well, yeah, Derek's thesis, like the outcome was like to teach physics effectively in this like multimedia format, is you gotta have misconceptions, right? Like the one of the ways is misconceptions, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I'm definitely butchering, you know, a 200 page thesis by trying to sum it up in, you know, 20 seconds. So it's worth reading. It's actually really not a difficult read at all.
Actually, I don't think you're butchering it. And considering that your job in some way, especially with Dr. Carl, is to create quick sound bites around the learning, I mean, that's perfectly fine what you just said.
Yeah, I try. But I think it's also important to remember that there is nuance, right? Like, as soon as you create a sound bite, you lose nuance.
Yes.
And yeah, it's not like, sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's worth just having a really long form discussion about something.
So speaking theses, I mean, obviously, eventually at the end of your PhD, a tome will be written at some point, which hopefully people read and use. I mean, what are you hoping to discover in your own research?
So I'm really looking at how people are changing their minds. And the reason that like it's kind of taken on its own thing, where it started off as purely about physics. And I really like that it is currently about physics, because physics is incredibly apolitical. Right, like we don't necessarily have, you know, political biases towards this kind of stuff. But the research that I'm conducting right now, and like the surveys that are going out live today, are it's about, so you watch a video, and then in that video there's four questions, right? And you write down your four questions, and then afterwards you watch the video where there's the solutions to the four questions. And what I'm asking the students to do is write down whether they have or haven't changed their minds after watching the solutions video. So that we're trying to capture the reasons, like what do they find compelling about this explanation? What they didn't find compelling about this explanation? And yeah, so from like the preliminary test that we did last year, we got some interesting results where there was a lot of people saying that they didn't change their answer because they thought their explanation of the physics was close enough, right? Or that the explanation that was given was wrong, right? Or that there was something wrong with the video, that was a trick question, or was that, you know? So there was all these different categories of ways to, you know, like a reasoning for not accepting the answer that was given to them. And I think that kind of critical reflection, right, it's really interesting, and trying to create, like, figure out what are the salient points of creating a you know, creating something that encourages positive reflection.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. And we're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing.
Yeah, and I kind of think that what you're doing extends well beyond physics education. It just does. I mean, it's education practices as a whole. And it kind of even go further than that. Just anyone trying to teach people something. It doesn't have to be informal education at all. I mean, what is your impact? Does the audience get what you're trying to say? it's probably a good thing.
And the reason that I find it interesting within the context of physics education is because, again, there's no politics involved. You know, like, the answer is this, whether you like it or not. And yet there's still people who are, you know, they're still not changing their answers for, you know, reasons that we might find strange or... So I find that interesting because I think one of the skills that I want to get out of this is I want to be able to talk to people who have different ideas and opinions about the world. And I want to be able to convince them that, look, like, global warming is real. You know, it's like, it's the real issue that we should be talking about. And, you know, like, AI is great and it's really interesting and it's really worthwhile, but we should also be talking about, like, we should be investing into safety research. Right. And convincing people that don't want to be convinced, you know, global warming deniers really don't want to be convinced that global warming is real. Right. For a number of reasons. But that's kind of the people that we should be trying to reach. That's the people we should be trying to talk to. And you can't do it in an, you know, angry or dismissive way, because that's not going to help anyone. That's not going to change anyone's minds. Like, that much we know. And, like, the details are the, you know, the interesting, that's the most interesting part.
Agree. And actually, I was speaking with some ABC broadcasters around this very issue that everyone's trying to grapple with in media, which is simply, how do we get people out of their echo chambers? I mean, let's be honest, like, we all, if you're not on Facebook, I mean, I get that it's probably wise not to be on Facebook, but if you're on social media and you obviously follow the people you want to follow and you don't follow the people you don't. And so you start to create your own reality in some ways, and therefore your own media, and therefore your own opinions and judgments around those. So it's a real issue to grapple with, especially in a democratic society that should understand all points of view before coming to decisions.
Yeah, totally. And as much as I'm a huge fan of YouTube, right? I think the platform in a lot of ways directly changed my life. Like, Derek putting out the incredible videos that he does, and, you know, Destin from Smarter Every Day and Henry from Metaphysics and all of these guys, you know, they really encouraged, like, just by creating such wonderful content, they encouraged me to do what I am doing now. But at the same time, the recommendation algorithm is so echo chamber based, right? Like, if you watch a video about cats, right, you will get more and more cats in your newsfeed, right? Like, in your recommended videos. And, like, that's fine for cats and that's fine for science. That's a good thing for science, but it's not necessarily great if you're going down, you know, a political rabbit hole that just gets more and more extreme.
Or a very extreme version of science reality, which is not actually reality at all.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the YouTube algorithm is trying to maximize time on site, and it's trying to maximize, you know, the amount of time that people watch the videos, and it doesn't really care about the content of those videos. And I don't necessarily think that's the way to, you know, a healthy society.
I feel that considering that Google's, you know, involved with YouTube now, and the do no harm mantra is part of their thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this could be naive in some ways, but I wouldn't be surprised, especially with AI and machine learning, be able to pick up what's actually within the content over time. I mean, obviously it needs some serious crunching of data here, but I kind of wonder if there is actually a way out eventually at some point where they can actually work out, well, what is the content of this stuff that people are consuming, and is it real? But who knows? I mean, that is for the quantum computing people to work out. That's so much data. It's crazy.
It is a lot of data, and it is crazy. And it's there was an interesting case with Brady Haran, who runs a channel called, he runs so many channels, but it's called, one of them is called Numberphile, and it's absolutely fascinating. And this was a video about, like, the very, very early stages of film, right? And how film cameras were developed and how they were used, and, like, all the, you know, the science behind that. And you know, it's an educational video, but in one of the clips that was shown was like an anatomical, like a anatomical video of a person walking, right? And even though there's like no explicit content there, the YouTube algorithm flagged that as nudity.
Right.
And it's kind of like, well, like, of course it flagged it as nudity. Like, it thinks that it's a, you know, it's a naked person, which, you know, in some ways it kind of is. But like, there's a fine line between like, that is obviously an educational video, right? Any person that watches it knows that it's an educational video, right? But an algorithm doesn't, right? So that video got demonetized and blocked, even though it really shouldn't have. It's back online now because it's like a human sorted it out, you know? But I think we're still a long way to go with the YouTube algorithm.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not qualified in any way to make any comments even in the near future at all. my headspace is way in the distant future.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Man, hey, we went down a weird rabbit hole.
And it's not the first time, and it won't be the last time too, by the way. but that's okay. It's all part of it. Hey, just out of interest, I mean, obviously there'll be some people who would want to emulate what you've been getting up to in science communication. Hey, they may even want to write for Dr. Carl or whatever it is. What sort of advice would you suggest to people listening who may want to go down that particular rabbit hole?
Study hard. Like really just, I'm serious. There are certain hoops that are really hard to jump. Like, especially if you're in high school or university right now, right? And want to have an interesting life and an interesting career. I really do recommend that you get, you know, above a certain grade. So people kind of like look at you more seriously, as annoying as that is. And as much as I hate that, because I really think we should be judging humans on, you know, how they are as humans rather than their academic record. The academic record really does help, right? Like if I didn't have the marks that I had in my last couple of years, my first couple of years of uni were terrible, but my last couple of years were a lot better. I wouldn't have been able to get into a PhD at the University of Sydney. And then I wouldn't have been able to, you know, hang out with Dr. Carl and do work for him and do all of these interesting things. So that's number one, is like your grades need to be decent. And the other thing is talk to people, like be interested in stuff, like create your own thing, right? Like if you're interested in science communication, have your own podcast, right? Like have your own YouTube channel. And when you apply for a job as a science communicator, you have a little bit of portfolio going, right? Like you're not going to be just a kid that goes, hey, I'm really interested in science communication. Like I really want this job, right? Like, you're going to be the person that goes, hey, I'm really interested in science communication and here's my portfolio. Here's the work that I've been doing for the last year, right? This is kind of proof that I care about this, right? So I think just putting in the work, right? There's no way around that.
Yeah, that's right. And being avidly curious over the top of that means that the work doesn't feel like work. It's sort of play. Yeah. And then you end up in this situation where things are almost out of hand, for at least on our front, where we've got so much stuff going on that I generally just enjoy doing crazy stuff in the middle of the night purely because, hey, I just want to try that too.
Yeah, for sure. But I also don't want to, I am ridiculously privileged, and I want to acknowledge that privilege, being, you know, all of the things that I am in our society, and also the fact that both my parents are physicists and all of these kind of things. So I'm not like, it is privilege and it is luck. And I'm definitely not saying that I got here only because of hard work, right? Yeah. I didn't, right? It was a lot of luck and a lot of support from others. So yeah.
Yeah, it's usually a confluence of many things. And actually some studies of business leaders who have made some serious impacts in Fortune 500 companies and all the rest, and they do attribute a portion of that themselves. They say it themselves outright. I needed a sliding doors moment for this to happen, and it did, and I took it. And that's actually true. That's part of it as well.
Totally.
So thanks so very much for popping on, Peter, with this podcast. Now, obviously, I'd really like some people, if they wanted to be able to get in touch with you, have that ability. So how would they be able to get in touch?
I have a Twitter account. So that's PTRLBDV, which is my name without all the vowels. which yep. I thought was a good idea at the time. And now I realize now that I have to spell it out on a podcast. It's not such a great idea.
That's okay. We'll put that in the show notes. That's no problem at all.
Fantastic.
No, no worries. I mean, I really do. I encourage people to get in touch with Peter because, I mean, the work that you're doing is, yeah, it's a serious value. And hopefully once it's published and out in the blue yonder, that people then pick it up and then go further with it again, which would be really handy.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, please do contact me. If you're listening to this, say hi on Twitter.
Absolutely. He won't bite. All right. Well, thank you very much, Peter. Have a fantastic afternoon.
Yeah, right back at you. Thank you.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
Well, there you go. That was Peter Lebedev, who's doing a fantastic job in making sure that all the stuff that's out there might actually be useful to the learner in terms of science education videos. It's going to be very interesting to hear exactly what his final research will end up looking like and how that might shape education going forward. Now, the thing is, there is lots of university research going on to education in science, and one of our past guests, Dr. Simon Crook, has been doing a bit of that too.
A former colleague of mine had this phrase, engage me or enrage me. So if they're engaged, you've won out. You're not going to have to deal with as many classroom management issues.
Don't you love that phrase, engage me or enrage me? That's exactly how we should be thinking about our audiences in general, our classes. I mean, as a student, wouldn't you hate sitting there just watching going, this is just not for me? And worse, the people who just keep on droning on and they won't get to the point. It's so important. And Dr. Simon Crook has been doing a lot of work with educators right across Australia through his efforts in his company called Crooked Science. Funny name, but certainly very serious when it comes to science education and the context in the classroom. So go ahead and check out episode 29 of the Phys Ed podcast and know that there's still more to come. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsom for Phys Education, and you've been listening to the Phys Ed podcast. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au